since then COVID happened, every day I repeat to myself, I need to be grateful for what I have today, because what I have today is what I wanted yesterday. So yeah, for me COVID, it's been a blessing, because I'm always, probably I'm naive, I'm too positive, but I like to be positive and see just the best part, you know. Money comes and goes.
This is the Deep in the Weeds podcast. I'm Anthony Huckstep. As we've discussed on the series, Australia's incredible food culture is a direct result of migration patterns. Those willing to leave it all behind on a promise of sunshine and prosperity. With the pandemic taking such a toll on so many, what impact has that taken on those that came to Australia to enrich our culinary landscape and find a new home? Matteo Margiotta is the owner of Pino's Vino e Cucina in Alexandria, Sydney. Mate, how are you going?
Really good, Anthony. How are you?
I'm good. It's been a while since I've seen you. You used to be just around the corner from our house, and it was a place we used to drop into all the time, and it was a welcome little hidden gem in Sydney. How's the restaurant been? It's been there for 4 years now.
Twenty-first of December will be 4 years. It's been really good. It's been really good, except this year, as usual. How's everybody? I can't really complain. My neighbors support us so much, so I'm really grateful for that.
Well, it is a real hidden gem, and you were a bit of a hidden gem. You actually celebrated 10 years of life in Australia this week. What does that feel like?
Look, it was an emotional day for me, really emotional. It just brought me back, like, when I left Italy, being Italian, old school. I grew up with my parents. They're really old school, especially my dad from Napoli, Pino. I got married at 24, and unfortunately, I decided it wasn't my life at 26, just close to 26. And I just want to get my life back together and go as far as I could. So I pick Australia, and I definitely, can't regret this choice. I left Italy with nothing in my hand, and I was like a really broken man. I wanted to do something better with my life. I wanted to reestablish my family and build something to make people happy. And, it's been a journey. And after 10 years, look behind and say, like, I did it and I'm happy.
Why did you choose Australia?
Oh, well, I just want to be as far as I could. I didn't want have people like reach me so easily, and the people then really wanted to see me and stay with me. There's a 16,000 case between us, so they really wanted to see me. So that's good. So just my family and my really good friend, which is up to, came over in from Australia.
When you arrived here, was it what you expected?
Yes and no. I never been in Australia before, so I arrived in Australia. I couldn't speak a word of English, which was challenging. And, you always picture Australia like Crocodile Dundee, wild and everything. And then all of a sudden, I arrived in Sydney. Sydney was another metropolis, I'm from Rome. Rome obviously has a lot of history, but, I've been traveling around the world. There's not much different between, New York or other big city. But I had the pleasure then, I went to Cape Tribulation, Port Douglas, and then I said, okay, this is Australia. But I love Sydney.
What did you do when you first got here? I know you've had your restaurant for 4 years or almost 4 years now, but there was that period of time after you got here. Did you jump straight into the hospitality sector?
Look, I arrived in Australia literally with $3,000 in my account. And I arrived in Melli. I didn't want to go in Bondi because there were lots of Italians. And back then, I just want to stay away, especially because I needed it to, learn English. So the best way, just like throw yourself in the thick of it. I was on a sponsor visa, not on a sponsor visa, but on a working holiday visa. So I was on a time restraint. I did not want to go back whatsoever. So I knew then I needed to find a sponsorship. So the first 2 weeks, I just partied, just to cheer me up for what was happening back in Italy. And the third week, I sent some resume, which is lots of people, you know, reply to that. And I didn't want to travel that much because I wanted to learn surf as well. And Garfish in Melli just hired me. And I remember the first time that I had an interview with the head chef. I said, look, I don't want to waste my time. I don't want to waste your time. I'm looking for a sponsorship. And they were like, whoa, 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 go easy. We haven't seen you even using a knife. You're just demanding a sponsorship. So yeah, fair enough. And after a month, they offered me a sponsorship, which is
that's history.
Yeah, and I was really happy. But look, was really hard. It was really hard. It was like a really different time. You know, the hospitality industry changed so much in 10 years.
As you move forward, you left that restaurant. And can you tell us what you did before opening your own restaurant?
Look, after Garfish, I went to work straight away at Cottage Point Inn, which was a lovely place. I was a sous chef there with Guillaume. And, you know, we were doing just lunch service and two nights a week. But even there, even the salary was like really good for me, because from $50,000, I jumped to $70,000. But I was finding myself to do 90 hours a week. And after almost a year, I said, okay, that's it. I can't carry on like this. Back in the day, I had a girlfriend that used to work for Black Star Pastry. And she told me then, Chris, I was looking for somebody baking with a wood fire oven, some bread. And I had lots of experience with wood fire oven, not about bread whatsoever. And, but I like challenging. And I say, yeah, all right, let's do it. So that at that time I was living in Melli, and his shop was in Rosebery, and I was driving my motorbike, my Ducati, every morning at 2 a.m. in the morning to go there at 3 o'clock. But for me, it was the best life, because, you know, there wasn't a pressure of performance at a fine dining restaurant. I used to go and start at 3 a.m. in the morning, put some Pink Floyd on, make my coffee, light the fire, and by 10 a.m., my day was over, and that's it. And that was perfect. And then Christopher asked me basically to manage a shop, a Rosebery shop for him, because he said, and I was wasted just to do like a baker. I was like, I wasn't really keen, because, like I said, I changed job just because I didn't want to have any responsibility whatsoever. But after that, you know, my dad always say to me that I was meant to work for nobody and just to work for myself. So I say, okay, I can learn so much, you know, from the other side of the kitchen and managing people and everything. So I start to manage Rosebery, which is went really well. Then Chris asked me to open a pop-up on a powerhouse museum. And then from there, he asked me to design and open a concept in Kinokuniya Bukso, which is I did. After my, let's say, third shop, I decided, okay, let's open a restaurant. And I was looking for sites. And again, background and fine dining, lots of, writers and critics and Dion Black Sapesti as well. Really busy people coming over there. I just wanted to find a spot really quiet where somebody could come to the restaurant just because somebody told about the restaurant. So I didn't want to do any media or any marketing. And coming from Rome, I wanted to find a venue then could took me back in Italy, you know, back in Rome. In Rome, you're walking across, some hallway, and you stumble across a restaurant and say, oh my God, I didn't know that was a restaurant here. And that's why I chose 199 Lawrence Street in Alexandria. No restaurant around me, not for the competition, it's just because I wanted to make sure then I was a neighborhood restaurant. looking after my customer, looking after my friend, because all my neighbors are friends, you know, offering like specials every week and changing the menu every season make my neighbors come over two or three times a week as well. So we build a fantastic relationship, and I'm really proud of them.
Well, it really is was a hidden gem until the media found out about it. And like myself and lots of people know about it now. Tell us a bit about the restaurant. It's a really interesting space. It almost feels like a tavern or a bistro. And the food there is really pushing the envelope of Italian cuisine in a modern sort of way. Tell us what you're doing there.
Well, when I found the restaurant wasn't looking like it looks now. Obviously, I was, you know, super excited. My adrenaline was really high. And I said, okay, let's get it. And obviously, I didn't like the look of it. So I started to renovate it. And there was like a Russian doll, you know, a floor on top of the floor, on top of another floor. And the structural floor, all of a sudden, was rotten. And then council came over and said, you can't open a restaurant if you don't put soundproofing. So I had invested so many money on soundproofing window, ceiling, walls. So all of a sudden, my budget, if it was 10, it ended up to be like 1,000. And all of a sudden, I took a cost. So took a cost, I basically built the site by myself, demolishing it by myself. And a few bits and pieces, like all the bar has been, you know, built by professional, obviously. But yeah, and then saving on timber and designer. We did not use any designer whatsoever. You know, I remember just to sketch the banquets, I've been probably sitting, tried 20 or 30 different banquets and sketch them to make it comfortable and see, nah, this doesn't work for this, or this doesn't work for that. So at the end of the day, I come up with my sketch. And then, you know, there's many companies, big company in Sydney, especially, then building amazing restaurant. For designing point of view, they're fantastic. But they too perfect. Too perfect, then you can't, they don't have a soul. They don't have a bit cold. I did not want that from Pinos. And so that's why I decided to reclaim timber. So back then they were demolishing houses for WestConnect. And I went there and salvaged Oregon, and to build the entire place. And I even came across to a church, 100 years old church, which is we salvaged all the floor, and which is the floor now in Pinos is from a 100 year old church. So now you come in Pinos, you had the feeling that Pinos has always been there, but he hasn't. And you got that perfect imperfection that makes the place warmer.
It certainly does. Tell us about your food. It's a real joy. There's really big flavors, but it's actually really pushing the envelope of Italian cuisine.
Yeah, look, the first year I started in the kitchen. Going back in Sydney, back in the day, there were just a few Italian restaurants and I really appreciated, because I think, obviously, being in Australia, you need to adapt your dishes to be Australian palate friendly, which is for a truly Italian, sometimes it's an experience for sure, but somebody just want to have a plate of pasta, like every time you go in Italy, people come over and just say, oh my God, the food is amazing there. So I never understand why people need to get a twist or to make it Australian friendly. So we start to deliver just like simple dishes. At the end of the day, this is the Italian cuisine, simple dishes. That's it. Simple cuisine. There's not so many, you know, stuff on the plate, a few ingredients and that's it. And so I start to say, okay, we do just traditional food. We do just traditional pastas and with a modern twist, obviously, but it's still Italian modern twist. We do our pasta fresh every morning, our bread fresh in the morning. After 2 years, I've been like chasing him for a lot, he's a good friend of mine, take over the kitchen, so Cristiano Padacca, and he's from Tuscany, so we're really close by. And he has the same view of mine. He just like really stripped back all the fancy Italian build a traditional menu and just make a twist, a modern twist. But that's what we're doing, just traditional, straightforward dishes. And if people don't understand, well, it's okay. But this is what we're selling, Italian traditional, not fusion whatsoever.
Take us back to Rome. What was the food of your youth like? Was it a big influence on you as a chef?
Yeah. Look, by trade, I'm an electronic and mechanical engineer. I always had the passion of cooking, especially from my family. My dad's side, from being from Napoli, you know, my grandma and himself as well, he's always been cooking. I remember every Sunday morning, that was a seafood morning. And, you know, being a teenager, I was waking up maybe at 11 or 12 if I had been out. And for breakfast, basically, I was having, you know, vongole spaghetti or like a moscardini with tomato sauce or like lobsters or like, you know, sardines, all those sort of things. So cuisine has been like always been in my blood. And when I finished my degree, I wasn't happy. Even if my position was really good, back in the day I was traveling around the world, but was a bit sterile as a role, as a suit. And I started cooking. A friend of mine asked me to go and help in the kitchen, and since then I never left. And even when I moved in Australia, I never looked back. And I just jumped straight away in hospitality and straight away in the kitchen, because this is what it is. This is my passion, you know. Create a dish, not much now, but deliver a dish, deliver a concept, and see people coming over at your restaurant, sitting down, tasting, and then make that smile. It's amazing. Or just that face when they open the door, they say, "Wow, that for me is priceless." You know, with other job I never experienced. You know, so for me, hospitality is like everything.
Like most in the industry, you've had a tough year. Can you take us back to the beginning of lockdown? What did you do in order to keep money coming in the door?
Yeah, look, my journey started before the lockdown. As everybody knows, Italy got it really bad before Australia. And I was really concerned. I did have a baby daughter my first baby daughter on 2019, October. So around Feb, things came. It got a bit loose back in Italy, and I was really worried and could start here as well. And then they did. So I decided to shut the restaurant 2 weeks before the government imposed it, because I was concerned for my baby daughter, for my family, for my people here, for my guys, and for my neighbor as well, because I'm the first one to looking after them. So don't provide a service, don't be able to provide a safe environment for my staff and my customers and for myself, I decided to shut. And I remember the boys didn't know. I show up that Sunday and crying and say, "Guys, I need to shut." And for me, it was like, you know, this has been my dream. I put basically everything I worked for it in the past 10 years in this business, and I didn't know what would happen, but I make the call. So most of my people are working only the visa, sponsored, student visas. When I decided to close, I said, "Guys, let's take a week annual leave, and then let's figure out what's happening." And all of a sudden, it's been 2 weeks. And then, unfortunately, the government came up with JobKeeper, JobSeeker, which is, like I said, it wasn't applying to my staff. And, Pino, what I say to my boys, Pino is my family. The team has been like, he's part of my family. It's a really small team. And coming from a chef point of view and having those bad experience back in the day where you were just a number or an orange, you know, just to get squeezed as much as you could, I never wanted to do it to anybody, especially in my business. So I say, "Guys, I'm going to pay you, because I don't want to lose you, because, again, they're part of my family, they're part of my team." Unfortunately, I lost my manager, because I couldn't, with $750, he had a fiancé, couldn't carry on, but, you know, I kept going and pay my student visa guys and my sponsor guys out of my pocket. for the first week. So that was week three. And after week four, we decided to go back on takeaway. Takeaway. So I just reinvent the business model to do takeaway because, you know, obviously the food that we deliver is not takeaway friendly. I came up with like a web store as well. So I invest so much of my time to be able to just keep up and pay my guys. Because for me, to be closed, I was making a loss. And if I would have been open just to take away, I would make a double loss considering my time. But at least I was helping my guys. And we had an outstanding help from the neighbors. Then, you know, there were people taking takeaway four times a week. It's unbelievable. Wow. And yeah, so that helped us going so much, really much. Business-wise, yes, it's been really, really tough. Personal life, again, my blessing with my baby daughter. For me, the time that I spent with her, I remember then I was like envisioned to spend that time in the next 2 or 3 years. So my wife had to go back to work, obviously, otherwise I will not be here to speak with you. After 6 months, and so I took over and I became a daddy, a full-time daddy. So yeah, I was going around every day to push the pram and spend time with my daughter, which has been like priceless, and which is, yeah, you know, a gift in me to be just like put a notch down, a couple of notch down, you know, 3 years down, to slow down, appreciate it, everything. Then when you caught up to building a business, running a business, make everybody happy, you go too fast to appreciate actually what you're having at the moment, you know. And since then COVID happened, every day I repeat to myself, I need to be grateful for what I have today, because what I have today is what I wanted yesterday. So yeah, for me COVID, it's been a blessing. Because I'm always, probably I'm naive, I'm too positive, but I like to be positive and see just the best part, you know. Money comes and goes. But unfortunately, you know, like people like Victoria had a tougher, and I feel for them so much. I don't know how they've been dealing with it. And to be honest, I feel like sick even thinking about it. And powerless as well, because I cannot do anything. I've been buying some products because I saw that the government, you know, build some website to sustain those small businesses and everything. But yeah, that's why I feel even more blessed and everything here in New South Wales.
You chose to put Pinot's in an area that was hidden, and you could actually miss it if you're walking along the street. You wouldn't notice it's there. It's so hidden. But what's it been like trading? The restaurant's open again. How important is the being a local hub of the community as a restaurant during this time?
It's been my focus. My main strength is just be part of the community. We always, like Pinot's, I'm always part of, you know, raffle or donation for the schools around. And I want to be part of the community, because if you give to the community give you back. And, you know, like I said before, without them, I could never done it. And I want to be like this. I want to be a community. I'm not doing marketing to, you know, fish people from outside the area. I like them people from outside Alexandria come over, because they got a best friend or somebody else then come over and they recommend it. So I like that relationship, because that it's a relationship. Every single customer, which is friend, they come over here at Pinot's, we need to have a connection with them. That's something that I always say to my guys. It's not a restaurant and in and out, we just need to make some money and everything. Money is not my, probably I'm a really bad businessman, because some of the restaurateurs that I know, they told me that, but I'm not, my quality is high quality. My service is great service, and I'm not putting rush to customers, except for the Friday, Saturday, and then we have to turn the table twice, otherwise we will never survive. But the margin here at Pinot's are really slim, because for me, the concept for Pinot's is, again, coming from fine dining, well, sometimes it's a kind of a sterile environment to having a meal, you know, it's a fantastic experience, but you don't have that connection. So my goal when I, and when I as well, people here say, you need to imagine then you going to your best friend's house for dinner. You feel comfortable. You feel easy going. And then, you know, then they give you the best food, the best service, the best wine, everything. But you feel comfortable. You feel at home. So that's why people are, I think, coming over more than once a week, because, you know, we welcome them with like friends coming over for dinner. And for me, that's what it is. And I love them. I love them so much.
Well, it's spring at the moment and we're heading towards summer. Can you give us an idea of the sort of food that's on the menu at the moment, what people might experience at Pino's?
Yeah, absolutely. So the menu at the moment, we on a spring menu, which is fantastic. Spring is one of my favorite seasons, to be honest, and autumn. So we got, you know, handmade burrata. Even that burrata, our burrata is like handmade with a knot, so it just like goes up on price for sure. With some pan balsamic and vinegar, you know, we push an envelope with a ox tongue that we just low cook it for 10 hours, and then we slice really thinly with salsa verde and horseradish. Or we go like for a classic dish, which is tonne fagioli. Basically, it's a yellowfin tuna carpaccio with cannellini beans and a shallot dressing. And then we go for the main course, you know, main course from Tonnarelli Bottarga, smoked eel and carpione sauce. Carpione sauce is typical from Piedmont. Basically, it's a kind of a sweet and sour sauce that is made slow cooking fish as well. Then we can have squidding spaghetti with champagne lobster and a bit of tarragon. Or 12 hours duck ragu with cime di rape, which is duck ragu. Obviously, everything is handmade here. Cristiano and I, we against any processed food. Everything must be made at Pino's, you know, except the cheese and the charcuterie, which is used in De Palma, which is outstanding, six generations, or the cheese. Then we pick our suppliers from Italy and really boutique and bespoke products, everything we make in the house, you know.
Well, 10 years you've been here. How do you see the next 10 years for Pino's and yourself?
Well, 10 years for Pino's. This year, I had in my mind to open a sister for Pino somewhere else. Different concept, but still, you know, still classic Italian. This COVID obviously put the handbrakes, a couple of handbrakes on the spanner, but no one stopped me. I think I got through everything, sponsorship here, all the challenging life, so COVID's not going to stop me. And if I still carry on to be blessed by my amazing people, customers and staff, we're going to get there. And obviously, I even spoke with my staff every time. It's like, I want them to be part of everything I do, because I want them to grow up. I wanted to give them something that nobody ever gave it to me, you know, especially in hospitality, because hospitality is a really tough industry, but it's really rewarding. So in the next 10 years, hopefully I'm going to have a couple extra restaurants. Fingers crossed.
Well, mate, we've loved having you on Deep in the Weeds, and I do miss your venue, not just the food, but as you say, it does feel like it's been there forever. It is quite a special little venue in a hidden back street of Alexandria. Please keep in touch, and we'll talk again soon.
Thank you so much, Anthony. Thank you. It's been a massive pleasure.
This is the Deep in the Weeds podcast. I'm Anthony Huckstep. Stay tuned as we share the stories of Australia's hospo community, suppliers and producers in search of hope during this pandemic. Special thanks to executive producer Rob Locke for making this all happen. Follow us on Instagram at Deep in the Weeds Podcast, or email us at podcast@deepintheweeds.com.au. Stay safe and be well.